Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 25 for sometime around the middle of August 2017. FatBike.com presents Fat Camp, a more or less monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes.
Welcome to Fat Camp Podcast number 25. This week is brought to you by the Boda Box. Changing things up
box
a little bit.
Wine.
Yes, indeed. Welcome to our 25th show.
Who would have thunk?
Yeah, who would have thunk 25 of these things that I've sat through. I know you've sat through, and hopefully not too many other people have sat through 25 of them, but this is the 25th. And we've got an agenda here. It revolves around an email. But before we get to the email, let's go down memory lane a little bit.
I think one of our first shows was about converting your fatty to a plus bike.
I think that was the first show. It might have been the longest show as well. Fat Camp number one.
That was a good one, though. That is a universal topic. I almost feel like I could return to that again and talk about it all over again. And it's not like there's a lot of new information. It's just It's a good applicable topic to a lot of people.
Well, and we've gotten comments or email about, hey, maybe you should revisit that or talk about that again. So yeah, I don't think it's a topic that you get tired of. It's kind of like tires.
Exactly. I never get tired of talking about tires. But at the same time, you and I say that there's a lot of subtlety to converting from, your fat bike to your plus bike. So I think it's a good topic to talk about.
Yeah. So that was the first show.
Yeah.
And then I think we just kind of chunked it along. We did hubs.
Yep.
Or we did spacing, I think it was.
Yeah, spacing and chain line.
We did overall geometry of fat bikes.
Yep.
And the differences or similarities between modern mountain bikes, old mountain bikes and new fat bikes versus old fat bikes.
Yeah, like new school geometry, old school geometry.
Right. What else did we do?
Sorry, Chad. Yeah. We've talked a lot about new stuff coming out.
A lot of the times, in the mid-teens we just did because it was new stuff was coming out. I mean, fat bikes were still pretty innovative.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and plus bikes were coming on the scene and stuff. I mean, there's a lot going on as far as new product and a lot of innovation going on.
Right.
Which is cool. Fat bikes and plus bikes are still fringe enough that there's still some really innovative new stuff going on. But I have to admit, it's not the, sexy new thing in the bike industry anymore.
Right.
So.
Well, even in the mountain bike industry, mountain bikes are not the newest thing, but there's still new stuff coming out all the time.
Oh, exactly. There's still so much room for innovation. Yeah. That's the beauty of it.
I guess the bottom line is that we have 24 shows worth of technical fat and plus bike stuff that my wife has still not listened to.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't blame her either.
But we're celebrating our 25th podcast. And I think we have, I don't know if we should just jump right into it with the email from the listener. That'll get us going.
I mean, the overarching kind of topic for this one is going to be, for lack of a better way of putting it, how to adjust the geometry on your bike.
Okay.
It could be a plus bike, could be a fat bike.
How to adjust the geometry of your bike.
It's just, maybe there's certain aspects of your bike that you don't like for riding in your area. You're always whacking pedals, or you wish your bike handled a little quicker, or you wish your bike was more stable. Like, you're going down some rowdy downhill and, you're kind of feeling like a little sketched out. Or, in the case of this specific, readers or listeners email, they're talking about, okay, chain stay length. They ended up getting this bike. It's got kind of long chain stays. Is there any way to effectively get shorter chain stays?
And from that, KBS has bulleted a whole bunch of stuff that we're going to get into during the show. I think, is this guy, the guy is from Norway.
Yeah, yep.
And he rides a bike that I had never heard of until I did a Google search and it popped up on me.
Well, it, if you follow MTBR.
Okay.
That's
a lot to follow.
Yeah, there is. There's a huge amount. But it tends, there's a fair representation of, you know, sort of an international audience there. You start to end up hearing about some of the bikes that are available, you know, in the Scandinavian area and, you know, and things like that, or just in Europe, or, you know, there's different scenes going on in the world.
Right.
And, you know, it was kind of cool to end up hearing from somebody from Norway
yeah.
who listens to the show and, you know, was kind of asking about some aspects of this for a bike that, you know, we don't have available here in the United States.
How would you pronounce his name?
Oh, I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to say it. I'm Sven, and then
it looks like
Anna Finson.
Yeah, it looks like Sven.
I could be totally wrong, and I apologize if I am.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, dude's from Norway. He was talking about questions regarding chain stand. Like, I mean, that was really what it came down to.
Should we just read it?
Yeah.
I'll read it. You can just help me out with the big words.
Okay, deal.
Hi, and glad that you're back on the air. Well, thanks, Sven. It's good to be back on the air, by the way. Here we go. Had a quick question regarding chainstay length. Is there any way to counteract the length of this? Like any other adjustments you can do with a stem or seat, etc., to compensate for a long or short chainstay? Google did not help me at all, so I hoped maybe you could. Well, doggone it, we might outdo Google on this one.
Yep. Gauntlet thrown down. I'm ready to outdo right. Google.
Yes. I used the marital we there. Did you hear that? we might. I don't know jack squat about this stuff. Jeez. He continues. I was in the process of picking out a new fat bike. Ended on a Surly ice cream truck, but almost went for a Diamant Black Diamond X2, which comes with 2XL tires as standard.
So
do you want to make mention of this bike?
Yeah, so this is an interesting bike because I think it's only available sort of in the Scandinavia area. It might just be Norway. I don't know exactly what region. But there's a dude who does a lot of testing for this brand.
Okay.
I think his name is Espen. I think it's A-S-P-E-N. He's on MTBR. He's got some pretty good connections with like V-Tire.
Okay.
And he ended up getting these like early prototype versions of the V-Tire 2XL. And
sounds like somebody else I know.
Yeah. So like a dork. Yep. So, you know, those of you that might not be familiar with the V-Tire 2XL, it's the biggest tire out there. It's a 5.05.
It's the fattest of the fat.
But what he got was something that was even bigger. It's almost Whoa. 6 inches.
No way.
Yeah. And instead of having this big, burly casing, it's got a really, really, really lightweight casing. So it's very supple. And what he does is he's a littler guy. He's not like me. Like I like, you know, weigh 190, 200. This guy like weighs like 140, 150.
Oh, he's wafer thin.
Yes. Yes, wafer thin. he's got this monster tire setup,
okay.
which he can run at super, super, super low pressures.
Yeah.
So he's got all these videos up of him riding in like, you know, 5-6 feet of powder.
Oh, I've seen those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, okay. he runs it like stupid low pressure and he can just ride through anything.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's doing some really cool stuff.
Okay.
And he has some, you know, fat bike technology that's not available to everybody else.
Okay.
And kind of like showing it off and being like, hey, okay, you know, this is where the industry can go. This is where, you know, fat biking can go if people want to do that.
Yeah.
And if manufacturers want to end up supporting that. And, you know, it's some pretty interesting stuff that way. So this is a brand that I've got a lot of respect for because they are doing some innovative stuff out there. It's just not available.
Yeah.
You know, over a big chunk of the world.
I will put a link in the show notes for this bike that he's talking about, this Diamant, D-I-A-M-A-N-T, Black Diamond X2.
Yeah, yeah. It's so worth looking at.
Right. So he did not get that bike. He got the ice cream truck.
Yep. A lot of talk about a bike.
I will put a link in the show notes for the yeah. Surly ice cream truck, too, for any of those people who don't know what it is. Anyway, but refrained because of the fixed 467 millimeter chainstays and the wider 233 millimeter Q factor.
So Q factor is the width of your cranks.
Correct.
How wide your feet are apart.
And chainstay length is from your rear hub to your center of your bottom bracket.
Correct. Yep. So how far it is from your cranks to your rear wheel.
Gotcha. With the ice cream truck, I get 450 millimeters of summer. No, for summer. And I bought adjustable MDS, which supports 452.5 through 469 millimeters of adjustment to fit the V2 XL tires for winter. MDS, help me out there.
I'm pretty sure I should have done my adjustable research on this, MDS. But Surly's got a variety of different dropout setups for their bikes. So, you know, they're known for like their track dropout setup. So you can run it single speed or whatever.
Sure.
You know, I think that's what they end up calling, you know, the thing where they can end up basically you can position your rear wheel in a variety of different spots.
Okay.
So, you can get it with a fixed dropout or you can get it with this.
Okay. And then he continues, which I also ordered in cream colored compound based upon your recommendation, have not arrived. So he got the white 2XLs.
Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha. All right. He goes on to say, so basically I have made my choice, but from not finding anything useful on Google, I thought maybe this could be valuable info to others in the same boat.
Yep.
And from that, that's where this show kind of has started, how to change the geometry of your fat bike. Thanks, Sven, for sending this from all the way from Norway. It probably took two clicks of the button to get it here, but it arrived on the west coast of Michigan. So how do you want to start this out?
All right. So there's a variety of different metrics.
Can you change the length of your chainstay?
It depends on the bike.
Okay.
So, you know, there's some bikes that have, you know, like you and I. We have got Paragon sliders on our bikes.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, and like you can slide them back and forth. Or you might end up having sort of like this, you know, the Surly, where you'll end up having kind of like a track dropout or whatever, horizontal dropout, and you can slide that rear wheel back and forth. And you might have to end up using like a tug nut or whatever you want to call it, something to hold the rear wheel in the right spot. But you can adjust it.
Okay.
There's a lot of different variations. There's rocker dropouts. There's all these different things. So there's a lot of bikes out there where you can adjust your chainstay length.
Okay.
But a lot of them you can't.
Yeah. If you can't, are you surely out of luck?
Kind of yeah, kind of no.
Okay.
I mean, I don't mean to end up, you know, offering up kind of a, you know, an answer that straddles, you know.
Both. Right. Oh, so we don't know then.
Well, no. Okay, so let's talk about chainstay length and why you might want to have a shorter chainstay length or a longer chainstay length or whatever.
Okay, yeah.
So shorter chainstay length. What it does is it moves the rear wheel more underneath you, and it shortens your wheelbase.
Okay.
So typically what that does is that, you know, that's going to increase your weight bias more towards the rear wheel. So you're going to have more weight on the rear wheel.
Okay.
So if you're going down, you know, gnarly, you know, uphill and downhill type stuff.
Okay.
It's very steep. Having more weight over the rear wheel helps out. You're not going to
better traction.
It's better traction on the way up.
Yep.
But you're gonna have less weight on the front wheel when you go down. You have less chance of endoing.
Sure. Okay.
So, you know, if you look at like progressive trail geometry or any of these kind of modern terms which we've thrown out in the past, you know, you look at a lot of the, sort of the mountain bike world. Everything has been getting you know, a slacker head tube angle, a lower bottom bracket, and shorter chainstays.
Yeah.
Because when you suck that rear wheel underneath you, it tends to make the bike more playful.
How so?
It's one of those things where it's like, if you, like, when you use body English, if the wheel is right underneath you, it's not kind of like waggling behind.
Okay.
You, if you would. So it's like you go up over a jump or whatever. You know, you can use body English and you can control where that rear wheel goes much more easily. The bike doesn't feel as heavy underneath you. It has a much lighter feel. So you can play around. The bike feels just more playful. I guess that's the best way of putting it.
Okay.
And most of that is just it's a leverage thing. You know, it's like, you know, when you've got a lever arm. You know, if you have a given weight and you put that on a really long lever arm, it takes a lot of force to move that. And once you get it moving, it tends to have a lot of inertia and wants to keep moving.
Right.
Whereas if you've got some, you know, that same weight on a very short lever arm, it's easy to kind of whip that thing around and, you know, play around with it instead of it sort of having its own mind, you know?
Ah, click. I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good analogy. Thank you for explaining that. Good.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a leverage thing.
Okay.
Now, the negative to having really short chainstays is that you have a very rear wheel biased weight distribution. So like when you start going up really steep hills, yeah, you've got more weight on your rear wheel, so you got better traction. But the problem is your front wheel wants to lift off the ground.
Sure.
So, you know, a lot of, you know, modern bikes with the modern trail geometry, what they do is they have a very short chainstay, but then they have a very steep seat tube angle.
Yeah.
So what it does is those two things kind of counteract each other.
Okay.
And it gets your weight distribution back to kind of normal. So your front end isn't wandering all over as soon as you start to go up a hill. You know, it's like, it can be very difficult to hold a straight line if you got a really short chainstay bike and it's got a really long front end. So you have very, you know, a very big rear wheel weight bias.
By steep seat tube angle, you mean closer to 90?
Yeah, it's
towards that.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, it's heading more that direction.
Okay.
You know, normal, like the traditional seat tube angle is in the 73 to 74 degree.
And that angle's taken from the bottom bracket and chainstay?
Bottom bracket up to sort of the center of your seat lug or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
Compared to horizontal.
Compared to horizontal. Okay.
Yep.
So not necessarily chainstay then.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So a lot of these bikes that have like more progressive, you know, geometry, what they're doing is, I mean, they're going like, you know, 75, 76, even up to like 78, 79 degree seat tube angles.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, what they do is they, you know, they push you very, you know, your seat very far forward compared to where your feet are.
Okay.
So what that does is put more weight on the front end, keeps the front end down when you're climbing.
Yes.
But at the same time, you know, like when you're going downhill, most people are going to have a dropper. They're going to drop their seat post. They're going to end up, instead of being, you know, stuck where their seat is, they're going to be able to float back and forth. And then, you know, this wheel is tucked underneath them. So you've got this very playful feel on the downhill. It's easy to get your weight back, so you're not going to endo. And then when you start to go uphill, your weight distribution is good, and that's because you're going to be in the saddle. It's going to be a more fixed position.
Thanks for throwing that in my face about the most people have a dropper.
Well, it depends on where you live. You know, a lot of people.
Doggone it.
It's starting to become pretty standard equipment.
I hope Santa's elves make those. I think I wanted one last year, but no, I'm getting closer. Okay, so that explains it. I understand that.
So, chainstay length can be a really, you know, it's an important metric for how the bike is going to ride. You know, how playful it's going to be, you know, what your traction is going to be like, what your weight distribution is going to be like, a lot of things like that. So you know, if you aren't lucky enough to have, you know, a Surly or something like that, where you can move your rear tire around, and you've got this fixed distance between your bottom bracket and your rear wheel, you know, essentially what we're talking about is a weight distribution thing.
Okay.
You know, what a shorter chainstay does is it biases your weight more towards the rear end of the bike than the front end of the bike.
Right.
Now, there's other ways you can do that.
How's that?
Essentially, what this is going to be a hard thing to describe on a podcast, but essentially what you can do is you can rotate your position around the bottom bracket so that you kind of keep the same angle between, you know, sort of your thigh and your torso, because that's a big thing.
How do you do that?
Well, let me first explain.
Okay.
This angle thing that I was talking about between your thighs and your torso. You know, it's like, if let's kind of go with a fixed position of your pedals and your seat. You know, most people, what they do is they'll tweak your stem height so you don't get too much weight on your hands.
Yeah.
You know, you're not feeling too crunched over, your back's not hurting, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever. Okay. So what'll happen is typically you'll kind of settle into a position where you kind of got that, you know, a comfortable angle between sort of the range of motion of your thighs and what your torso is.
Okay.
Now, there's some people that are more flexible and they can bend way far over. Like if you look at a pro roadie.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's like their handlebars are like practically on the ground.
Right.
And you know, their seat is like way the hell up.
Yeah.
And you know, these guys are bent, hunched way over.
Right.
So essentially what's happened is, you know, like a roadie, their position is rotated way far forward. And, you know, in that case, they also end up being very flexible. And, you know, they're kind of freaks, for lack of a better way of putting it, in that, in how they can end up doing that. Now, the other extreme you can end up doing is you can rotate your position backwards. So most bikes, you know, you've got adjustment in your saddle. You can, you know, adjust it fore and aft. So, you know, kind of, you know, if you just picked up from the shop and you ever played with it, it's probably smack dab in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You can loosen up a couple bolts and you can tap on your saddle and you can move it backwards, you know, an inch or so.
Right, right.
And that essentially will do the same thing as shorten your chain stays because it'll put your weight more towards the rear of the bike.
I can simulate a shorter chain stay by sliding my saddle back.
Correct. Now, you can also get a different seat post. A lot of times stock seat posts are a zero offset or pretty close to that seat post. And you can get, you know, a greater offset seat post. I mean, they can go all the way up to like 25, 30 millimeters of offset.
And those are the seat posts. They got a little kink in them, right?
There's two kind of ways that you can do it. Either they just have a kink in it or the head itself is kind of cantilevered off the back of the bike.
Oh, okay.
So, like, if you look at Paul Components, I mean, that's a brand that's really, really nice stuff.
Uh-huh.
Those are made with a really big offset head. And I want to say it's like 27 millimeters or something like that.
Okay.
So that's a case of a post where it's like if you put your saddle in the middle of the rails, automatically you're going to be over an inch.
You're going to be
27
inch,
millimeters further towards your rear wheel.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a way that you can get that more rear wheel weight bias.
Okay.
Now, the thing about that, though, is as soon as you do that, you know, you've just increased your distance out to the handlebars.
Your effective top tube?
Effective top tube is not a term I want to use because that's a whole kind of different measurement that you'll see for listed for bikes. But essentially, your reach to the handlebars, just increased by 27 millimeters or a little over an inch. So, you know, just slamming your seat back has ramifications for how that bike is going to fit you. And you might feel too stretched out. You might feel like...
What if you shorten up the stem?
Well, that's the thing. That's what you can do. You can shorten up your stem some. Or, you know, I mean, there's some things you can do with your handlebars and things like that,
too. You can essentially shift your whole body back then.
Right.
By slamming the seat back and making a shorter stem.
I think the best way of thinking about it is that, so if you move your seat back, not only have you increased the distance to your handlebars, so your handlebars have to come back, but your handlebars also kind of need to end up going up a little bit.
Why is that?
Because if you think about what's going to happen, you know, your butt moved back, your feet are in the same spot, and then your handlebars move back. Your feet are still further out in front of you.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to kind of raise up the handlebars a little bit.
Okay.
So, you know, you can, this is what I was talking about, rotating your entire position around the bottom bracket.
Oh, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, you know, you can do all this stuff. And what'll happen is, you know, as you're like, let's, you know, just sit on the bike, you're going to have more weight on the rear wheel than on the front, you know, comparatively. And you're going to have more weight on your butt than you are in your hands,
sure,
which can greatly affect comfort, you know, both positively and negatively. And it's going to really kind of change how the bike handles.
Okay.
So, you know, that's a way that you can effectively get the same qualities as, you know, changing your chainstay length. The difference between, you know, the chainstay length and not is that, you know, if you shorten up your chainstay length, you bring those pedals back in and it doesn't have as many kind of like chain reaction effects in how it affects your overall position on the bike.
Gotcha. Wow.
And, you know, like what I was talking about, where you kind of taking this, you know, you're rotating around the bottom bracket, you're taking this more chill position,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're getting a little more weight on your butt, less on your hands. I mean, that can be really great if you're in a lot of steep terrain and you're doing a lot of steep downhills and you feel kind of sketched out. Like, you know, your bike is feeling like you might endo or whatever. You might go over the bars. You know, that can be a really positive thing. The negative to that is that you know, like if you're in the Midwest and you're riding in more mellow single track and you're carving a lot of corners in the saddle, that's when your front end is going to have too little weight on it. It's going to start to push in corners and, you know, you're going to get a lot of understeer. You know, you're going to kind of like push to the outside of the corners as you go through. You're just, you know, your front tire is going to slip sideways.
Sure.
So you can counteract that by then going with a more aggressive front tire. You know, maybe it's a little bit wider.
Okay.
Maybe it's got more aggressive side lugs.
Yeah.
You know, there's things you can do to counteract that too. But it's, you know, there's just kind of this chain of effects.
I see.
That take place when you try to fix this chain stay length thing.
But when you're thinking about just fat biking, though, that might be a better position for you in a snow condition.
Correct. Correct.
You know, a more chill, more, I don't want to. Not literally laid back.
Well, in a lot of cases, it is kind of laid back.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, you are kind of like more laid back. You know, you're more aft weight distribution.
But am I correct in thinking that that's what we kind of shoot for in the winter?
Yes and no. I mean, okay. It kind of depends on what your conditions are.
Okay.
Because, like I said, you know, your front end is going to push more. So, you know, people that are really, you know, looking for a more cross-country performance-oriented position, the front end is just going to end up pushing through corners.
Yeah.
So it's not going to work real well.
Right.
The other thing is that you're going to have this, you're going to have much more weight on your rear wheel and your front wheel. So when you get into soft conditions, you know, the front end is going to stay up on top of the snow, but
right.
your rear end is going to wallow.
Oh, I gotcha.
You know, so that's not necessarily good.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, sometimes that's what you want. Because if you're like riding, you know, crustier conditions or things like that, that's going to keep your front end from like dropping through the crust.
Digging into,
yeah. And then you endo or
right.
something bad happens.
Right.
Versus, you know, it's like a lot of times your rear wheel, you know, maybe digging in a little more is much more controllable.
Gotcha.
So there's positives and negatives to both.
Huh. Well, and if we go back to his question was, is there any way to counteract the length of this? So
yeah,
it sounds like,
yeah.
sounds like there is.
Is there a way to compensate for a long or short chain stay? Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, you can. It's just the thing is there's you know.
One thing is going to lead to another thing, which is going to lead to another thing.
That's exactly it.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So as long as you're cognizant of, oh, okay, I'm going to change my body position on the bike, and this is going to cause the bike to handle like this, so therefore I might need to go with a burlier front tire.
Right.
Or I might need to do this or, you know, whatever. Or I might have to go with a more cushy saddle because I've got more weight on my butt.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
All of that stuff, you know, as long as you kind of go into it and like, you're like, oh, okay, so this is the chain reaction and I can change here, you're going to be good.
Gotcha. Let's do something rare in Fat Camp Land and take a break.
Sounds
sooner
good.
Than later.
Sounds like a good plan.
So we'll be right back. Welcome back to Fat Camp Podcaster Land. Fat Camp Podcaster.
You're having troubles,
oh,
man.
Shoot. Anyways, people that listen to us, welcome back as well. Wanted to remind you about the Instagram at Fat Camp Podcasters. What, at Instagram? I don't know what the hell you do there. Or email us. We're shooting for a fall email-only podcast, which we're doing tonight. Anyway.
We were getting a lot of questions before our short little hiatus.
Yeah, so maybe now that
we're... Yeah, so, you know, just kind of letting people know, hey,
right.
we're happy to answer stuff.
Right. I'm happy to forward it to Ken, and he is happy to respond to you. If it's something easy, like maybe shoot an easy question, you'll get a response from me. But the email is fatcamppodcasters...
Plural.
...at gmail.com. And we'll respond to you within a 48-hour period.
Maybe.
Usually.
I don't know. I think I violated that rule a few times.
Well,
summer,
that's the thing.
We'll get back to you.
Yeah. We're going to be busy. First couple weeks in August, this podcast should come out.
Sometime before then. Yeah.
We're off the grid for a while. We've got either professional crap to take care of or
more fun.
purely recreational in multiple ways, activities to take care of as well. So we will be back third week in August.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting, though. I mean, both of us have been off the radar for a couple weeks. Ken headed out to Wyoming, right?
Yeah, Wyoming Wind River Range.
And did some backpacking out there?
Yep.
And that was a terrible time.
Oh, God, it was horrible. Just, right. Yeah, didn't hardly see anybody. Beautiful weather. Yeah, it just
sounds awful.
Beautiful, 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 beautiful area.
And I had an awful time in Glacier National Park with my family, hiking in the mountains, walking through a snowfield. So, so that's what's happening. We just got back. We're going to record here. We're going to be leaving, but we want to get back
to...
Well,
I'm going to be leaving.
You're going to be leaving.
Yeah.
Well, I got professional crap to do.
Yeah.
I got
a reading
conference to go to.
Yep. I just have to go out to Colorado and have fun up in the high alpine area.
So Colorado Trail for 2 weeks. That's your plan? Bikepacking?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then Leadville to cap it all off.
And then Leadville for the exclamation mark on the... on the plus tandem.
Yeah. Yep.
With new rack.
With new rack?
Yeah, you got a new rack for it now.
Oh, yeah, my car rack. Yeah. I'm pretty stoked about
that. You've got a custom tandem rack.
I no longer am I going to use a 2x4 with a one of the fork bed mount mounts on the front bolted to it. I've actually got a really, 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 really nice handcrafted steel rack now.
Ah, yes, with a Q on it.
Yep.
But it sounds like from the title of your Strava today that you and Lori are ready to go.
I think so. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked right now.
Okay.
The stoke is high. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And you're going to Colorado, dude. That'll be so rad, man.
Yes, I leave this week.
Yeah.
Days from now.
If you see anybody from Boulder, tell him I said, yo, dude, brah.
No, training's been really good. I mean, we've both been working really hard. The bike has been working awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
That's one of the concerns with the tandem.
Heck yeah, those things don't hold up.
Right.
But no, I mean, rocking the Eagle now.
Yeah. Oh,
Eagle
good.
Is amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it just amazing because you have one more gear, or is the shifting is?
No, what it is that you gain another gear, but then I haven't really seen any negative in any other way.
Okay.
So, you know, the shifting, it's just like, you know, like if you get a, I don't know what the heck the designations are, an X, like I'm riding XO Eagle or whatever it is.
Okay.
I've got another bike that's got XO1, you know, the 11 speed,
yeah.
You know, 1042 setup. It works exactly like that, but then you have an
one
extra
click.
Yeah. You're like one more easier gear.
Does it seem like there's a lot of gears back there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
you
got
can
an
feather.
Amazing
you
range.
Can feather in the exact ratio, exact cadence that you need.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm really stoked.
Which we could 20 years ago on 8-speed.
Well, yeah. With
so
a
we thought. Up front. So we thought.
Yeah. It's
with a triple up front. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It's like, you know, I mean, I'm not saying this is, you know, triple range, but it's, I mean, you've got a solid 2x bike range, and that was a big range.
Yeah. Right.
So, I'm geeked about it for the tandem. When I'm going to Colorado Trail, I'm going to ride, I think, 30 tooth chain ring and 1142 in the rear.
Okay.
On my single, and that's going to work great.
Loaded up. What's the full suspension acquiring looking at? All bags and loaded, do you think?
Darn.
40 pounds?
Yeah, I think it'd be someplace right around
okay.
there.
All
right. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to, well, I shouldn't say have to. I'm going to carry a fair amount of food. well, but I mean,
that's probably a good idea.
Well, there's a lot of places you can like bail off and, you know, go through towns.
Yeah,
and
but then you'd have to talk to people and shit like that. You
no,
know?
I wouldn't want to do that.
Exactly.
No, for me, it's like there's some stuff that I want to resupply on, but there's some stuff that I want to have is like just like my gimme. You know, there's some stuff that doesn't weigh a whole lot that I just, you know, I know I'm going to be able to end up eating and just
okay.
keep on the trail and keep moving. You get into town. I mean, towns tend to end up being, I mean, they pull you in, you know, they take time.
Wow. There's a dispensary on every corner, you know?
Ah, God bless Colorado. beyond that.
Yeah.
Though,
you might want to avoid town, you know?
No, I just, yeah. I mean, the towns can serve their purpose, but it's like, you want to make sure when you go there, you're not just going to go fuck around.
No, I mean, you're right. They do suck you in.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm, you know, I'm basically shooting for like a 10 to 12 day range and
10 to 12 hour mile. Oh, 10 to 12 days to complete
total,
it.
Total, yeah, for the 550 miles.
Which is
Denver to Durango.
45 miles a day?
45-ish, yeah.
How many hours will that be in the saddle?
I mean, it totally depends because, yeah, okay. You know, there's some spots where the trail's going to end up being fairly quick, and there's going to be spots where it's super slow, like hike a bike. You know, the Colorado Trail is a hiking trail. So there's some really steep, really, 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 really tough spots.
Gotcha.
So to cover 45 miles in a day.
Yeah.
On some spots is going to be incredibly difficult. And okay. There's going to be other spots where it's not going to be that big a deal.
I'm going to vicariously do the Tour Divide in the Big M Hills and ride the same amount that you do every day.
Yes.
But the elevation will be cut by like by a fourth or something like that.
No, so, but I mean, it's going to be rad because I'm going to spend, you know, like I've got all day to ride 45 miles on average. It's not going to be that.
Well, my concern is on the days that you do it sooner than later, that you'll be like, wow, I guess I need to ride farther then.
Well, maybe I will if I feel like it, or maybe I'm just going to go fuck around in some like flower laden high alpine tundra and take in all the beautiful peaks around me. Yes. I think I can handle both.
Right.
Yeah, I'm just going to go with whatever my whim is. Right.
And then when you're done with that 10 to 12 day fiasco, disaster, no, that that carnival, then you go to Leadville and then you ride Leadville.
Yeah. So I just got to get back from Durango to Denver.
And then you come back and you go back to work.
Yeah.
Jeez, oh, Pete.
But no, I'm looking forward to Leadville, too. I mean, that's going to be kind of like the Disney of the long distance world, and it's going to be some interesting indoctrination, and I'm looking forward to the culture.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And hopefully I get a belt buckle.
I'll be doing a music festival and going to some professional development. So,
oh man, that sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll be fielding the emails. Send them.
Yes. Finally, we're off.
This was not in the script. Ooh. So the second bullet about this is a show about changing the geometry of your bike.
You would never guess.
Yeah, exactly. Changing the geometry of your bike. So we also want to talk about head tube angle.
Yeah. So we started talking about chainstay length and what effect that has.
Now we've talked about this before, but let's rehash the whole thing out about head tube angle.
Yeah, because excuse me. You and I both end up having angle sets in our bikes,
along with everybody that we ride with.
Pretty much around here, just because, you know, your summer conditions and your winter conditions necessitate, or not necessarily necessitate, but the optimal setup.
Yeah, they benefit from adjustment.
Way different. Yeah.
Everyone needs a headset adjustment.
Yes, no doubt. Yeah, it just gets you in the right mind frame.
Right.
But getting back to bikes, Cane Creek makes this thing. It's called an angle set. They make a bunch of different sizes for it, you know, both for your fork and then also for your headset, like dimensions.
Since we've done it 3-4 years ago, have they gotten more sizes for angle sets?
No. They, it's kind of a static market.
Okay.
So you got Cane Creek, which has got a
inch
really
and a half standard.
Cane Creek's, you know, really like, covers a wide range.
Okay.
It's got all the, you know, most of the common stuff.
Right.
But then there's a bunch of other brands that you can get. Like FSMA makes one, or they did make one. There's a company over in the UK called Works. They make a gazillion different ones, and that's can be for some more specialized applications.
Okay.
And a little bit more range. So there's some good stuff going on that way.
And it's common in the downhill world to have this?
I don't know if common's the right term, but it's like they play with it more.
Okay.
Like, you know, the Cane Creek angle set, that is aimed kind of at the downhill segment.
Okay.
But what it is it's like you kind of got a ball and socket joint, you know, at the bottom. You've then got, you know, this upper cup, which is offset, like where the bearings are.
Yeah.
That the thing that presses in your frame, it's offset from your frame. So if you press it into your frame one way, you can slacken the head tube angle. You flip it around 180 degrees, it'll steepen the head tube angle. Cane Creek's, like the ones we've got, they go plus or minus 1.5 degrees. So you've got a range of 3 degrees.
Right. You can go half, you can go one, you can go 1.5.
Yep. Either way.
What about durability on those?
I have had zilch for issues with mine.
That's what I was going to say.
And
I
have 3 or 4 of them, and I've ridden the crap out of them for 4 years.
I would tell anybody right now that's listening in this room, which is nobody, But if anyone was like, hey.
Hey, 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 what about me?
Well, you're the one that told me this, so you already freaking know it. Change the angle. If you're going to ride the same bike in the winter and in the summer, even if you're, let's say you're four-season fat bike, amen, change your head tube angle.
Well, I think this is a particularly Midwestern thing because our winter setup is similar to a lot of people's. Like if I was riding the Rockies, I was riding down, you know, in a mountainous area, you know, someplace along the Appalachia, you know, I was riding out in California, whatever. I would probably end up rocking very similar geometry
to winter.
In the winter and summer.
So then how do you adjust for that in the winter in that same place? You just keep it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Your bike doesn't have to change a whole lot. Okay. So what we're talking about? Let's get into a little more nitty gritty about because we're talking.
Ken's
about
doing the Colorado Trail. Let's go back to that, man.
We're doing all these generalizations. We're not really getting into a whole lot of specifics. So
okay.
In general, most of the fat bikes out there have got fairly slack front end because you want a bike that's kind of chill handling.
68, 69
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
Okay.
Yep, that's typically you might get some down into the 67s, you might get some up in the 70s.
Okay.
But it's all kind of in that range. But if you live in the Midwest and you're pedaling your bike and you're doing a lot of cornering in the saddle. And I think this is the big difference. It's like in the Midwest, because you're not going on this monster downhill forever and ever and ever, you know, if you really want to go fast, you have to pedal and corner at the same time, or like pedal right up until you can't pedal because you don't have clearance because your bike's leaning over so far. And then you do a corner, you like sneak around a tree, you know, because it's so tight, and then you're like right back on the pedal. So you don't have time to get off your saddle. You don't have time to drop your saddle for that microsecond. Unless you could sprint out of the saddle going into it and then do that tight corner and then come out of it and be really fast, but you can't sustain that for, you know, 2 hours or whatever your ride is going to do. So,
dude, I'm just scrubbing speed in my mounts, man.
So, you know, you've got it. You have to spend a lot of time having your bike be balanced for cornering when you're in the saddle.
Correct.
And because of that, it's sometimes kind of nice to tuck that front wheel a little more underneath you, make the bike handle a little bit more quickly.
Oh, by changing the angle of the headset.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, you steepen up the head tube angle, it puts more weight on the front wheel because it kind of tucks it more underneath you. It just like what we were talking about with the chainstay length.
Yeah.
You know, the head tube angle does the same thing.
Okay.
It kind of tucks that front wheel more underneath you, kind of like how a short chainstay would tuck that rear wheel underneath you.
Now, did you hear that? Nice snap. Now I understand why a shorter chain. Okay, I'm not going to assume that I know what I'm talking about. A shorter chainstay makes the bike more playful. And so if you steepen up, I know that when you steepen up the head tube angle by bringing that wheel back a little bit, it also makes it more playful.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can get way over your head really quickly because it's very easy on a downhill if that wheel's way underneath you.
Oh, yeah.
To go ass over tea kettle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, the bike is going to be much more quick handling, which can be really beneficial. It's like if you're in really tight stuff and you're just like flick, 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 you know, it's like you can, you know, really maneuver through it. That's awesome.
Gotcha.
So, you know, this kind of Midwestern, you know, more flowy single track, not real steep. You know, if you're more cross country oriented, having a steeper head tube angle is key. And that's, gotcha, that's kind of the world we live in.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of places where you'll kill yourself if you end
up. No, okay, okay. But I would still recommend, because if I'm going to talk to anybody, it's going to be somebody from around here. Change your angle on your head tube.
Yep. Well, and, you know, this is another kind of tying together the chainstay length thing. You know, we talked about this big chain of, you know, things that change. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you got to rotate your position back, so you got to shorten up your stem. So then weight on the front.
Right.
You know, if
front tire traction.
Yeah, if you steepen up your head tube angle, it's going to kind of balance it out. You shorten up your rear end, you shorten up your front end, you know, you're still balanced in the middle.
I promise I will keep things going if you turn on just a little bit of light, because staring at you in the dark is getting kind of weird.
Oh, yeah. I'll turn on some lights.
So I think I understand what you're talking about, though, by bringing that head tube angle up. Ken's reaching. Oh, much better.
It just let there
kinda,
be light.
I kind of felt like I was falling in love with you there for a second. But
well, I'm glad that you I felt the love. That urge and, you know, saving that for the ladies.
And just in case you want to know, uneventful first set for Baker's Dozen show number three. yeah. I'm just switching
Andy
back
and his
forth.
Fish. What? Head tube angle. Head tube angle.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other thing is you might want to go the other way. There's a lot of...
What do you mean?
You might want to slack it out.
Oh, yeah.
If your bike is feeling sketchy, you want it to be more chilled out.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the angle set is really Choppa. Beneficial.
Yeah.
Because you can go 0.5 either direction with the Cane Creek, or I think it's like 2 degrees plus or minus with a Works headset.
Oh.
So, you know, you can change a lot. And we only talked about going steeper. If you go slacker, that can be beneficial too. You live in really steep terrain. You're playing around and stuff like that. You might want to.
That makes the bike less playful and more...
Yeah, more stable.
More stable.
Yeah. It's like
more cruiser-like.
Yeah, exactly. You get the front wheel out there, so you're not going to endo.
Right.
You know, it's like it does a lot of positive things.
Yeah.
And that might be what you want.
Yeah.
You know, just be able to go out in there and blast through stuff because you're on a fat bike and, you know, you got tires that allow you to end up going through boulder fields like crazy.
While test riding this bike, the RSD Sergeant that I have,
yep.
That's what I've noticed about that. It's 66 something. It's like crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a cruiser down the hill.
And you actually bring up a really good point because, like, with with the RSD.
Of course I do.
You've got a super long travel, you know, fork on that.
Oh,
what
yeah.
What is it? It's 140, 150?
It's 150.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So what happens is when you blast through a bunch of stuff and we're trying to end up getting the sound of boxed wine pouring into a glass right now. When you blast through a bunch of stuff and let's say that, you know, you go into a big hole.
Yeah.
And that you lose that 150 millimeters off the front of it.
Right.
You know, your front end of your bike steepens up a ton.
Yeah.
So that's why you want to have that bike so slack, because you're going to be going steep down a hill. You're going to drop the front end. And it's like all of a sudden, you know, you're up to like this, you know, 74 degree head tube angle. And it feels super sketchy because your fork compressed.
Sure.
You might want to do that with your bike if it's just feeling a little squirrely.
Right.
Now, along with that, you might play around with your fork length.
There's more.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the head tube angle.
Fork length, okay.
Yeah, head tube angle is really big because, you know, let's say your fat bike came without a suspension corrected fork.
Okay.
So it's kind of a short fork.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's not as long as a Bluto or whatever, or a Ren or whatever you want to run.
Sure.
Let's say that, you know, you want to put a taller fork on. So what that's going to do is that's going to rotate your whole bike back.
Sure.
It's going to slacken all this stuff out. It's just going to slacken your head tube angle. Maybe you want to end up, you know, steepen it back up. Maybe you want to end up leaving it like that. Who knows?
Okay.
This angle set, it'll allow you to play around with that stuff.
But you can't change. Okay, this is a really freaking dumb question. You can't change the length of your fork with the fork that you have.
No, unless you're going to end up doing a travel adjust thing or something.
Right, okay.
You know, and then it changes the length. Right. But in general, most people can't do that.
Okay.
But if you're going to put on different forks, they're going to be different lengths. The head, you know, set adjustment thing allows you to kind of control for what your head tube angle is.
Right.
Even though, you know, longer and shorter forks are going to make it either, you know, a longer fork makes it slacker, shorter fork makes it steeper.
So that takes care of that bullet, though, with the head tube angle. And I never thought about the fork. You just threw the fork in on me.
Yeah. So there's a lot the head tube angle does.
Okay.
So, you know, we talked about how you control the rear end, how you control the front end.
Right.
Now we got to talk about the middle.
Well.
Or you want to take a break?
No. It's something that's on my mind. It was pointed out to us. We took a road trip with our friend Mickey McCann the other day, who still wants to have everything legal in 51 states.
I think it was 52, wasn't it?
I don't remember how
much
it was.
A lot of states.
He noticed the where we went to a trailhead, he noticed that the Baptists were having single speed at 9:30 in the morning.
And on Saturdays,
Yeah.
No, it was Sunday
mornings
yes.
at 9:30 was single speed. I have noticed two churches since then that also hold single speeding at 9:30 on Sunday mornings. So
I think we all should
congregate and
make single speed great again.
I think we should. But yeah. I'm surprised.
Single speeding's awesome.
I'm surprised that single speeding has gotten into the
all the churches.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
Crazy.
It's happening everywhere. Just exactly. Keep your eyes open.
Let's talk about the middle.
Okay. Let's talk about the middle. Bottom bracket height. So that's basically, this is a measure of how high your center of gravity is.
Oh. Let's not talk about how high your center of gravity is. Jeez.
But it also has to do with like kind of where your pedals are in reference to the ground.
If you're, okay, so the bottom bracket is the bottom thing where all three tubes connect.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. It's where your cranks spin around. Yep. Okay.
I actually knew that. I just wanted to play stupid on that. So excuse me. So that's your bottom bracket shell.
Yep. Yep.
And the height, once you put your wheels on.
Yep.
The distance from the ground to that shell where all three tubes come in is called your bottom bracket height.
Correct.
All right. And if it's low, that means that your pedals are also going to be low.
Yep.
And if it's high, that means your pedals are going to be high.
In general. And your center of gravity.
And your center of gravity. So if you're low, you're going to be sitting. Now, do you essentially sit more in the bike, or does that have to do with more geometry?
No, that's a really good way to describe it.
I've been on some bikes where I'm feeling like I'm in it.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
Yep.
Like this RSD Major, I feel like I'm in it.
Yeah.
The pivot that we did at Mulberry Gap, I was like, whoa, I just climbed into this bike.
Yeah, in both of those bikes are situations where, you know, it kind of follows the, you know, the slack front end.
Yeah.
The low bottom bracket, yep. And then short chain stays.
Okay. And so that allows you to control the bike more?
It makes the bike feel very stable.
Okay.
Like, you're not going to go out ass over tea kettle. You know, it's like you're kind of just like, you described it. You're in the bike. Okay. You just feel very planted. Because okay. when your center of gravity is low,
yeah,
you can do all sorts of stupid stuff. I mean, it's very hard to knock your, you know, you off your line. Okay. You know, it's like if there's a bump or a, you know, whatever, you screw something up. It's very hard to knock you off your line when your center of gravity is low.
And why is that? What's the physics behind that?
Okay, so if your center of gravity is high, and then all of a sudden your wheels move, you know, 2 inches to the right or whatever, out from underneath you, it has a bigger effect than if your center of gravity is very low.
Is that because it requires a longer amount of time or more force to get you back to that center again?
Yeah, it's like it's just you already have more inertia, like, you know, you're further away, right, the lever arm thing. Yeah. Your weight, your center of gravity has more effect because your center, you know, gravity's off center from where your contact patch is.
Sure. Nice.
Yeah. So
that was classic.
Yeah, so, you know, the higher it is, the longer the lever arm is. So,
right.
You know, the easier for your given weight to, like, throw you off.
Well, let me play stupider. Is that a word?
It is now.
Well, why wouldn't you want a low bottom bracket then if you wanted to be sitting in the bike and have more control and be able to get to be more stable and be able to rail stuff and bounce over stuff and not have to tip over?
Because you don't want to whack your pedals and die. You're going to flip, you know, and
is that the only reason? It's for pedals?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. It all has to do with pedal clearance. So, you know, it's like in kind of going back to this progressive geometry thing. So
I got an idea.
The slack front end, low bottom bracket, short chain stays.
Right.
So, it's a really, really, really fun bike to ride because chain stays are short. Bike's really maneuverable.
Sure.
It's really fun that way.
Yep.
Your head tube angle is really slack. You don't have to worry about eating shit, basically.
Right, okay.
You know, it's like you're not going to go over the bars.
Right.
Your bottom bracket's really low, so it feels really stable.
You're in the cockpit,
You're basically a freaking hero on this bike.
Yeah.
You know, and as long as you don't have to pedal and, you know, some of these other types of things.
Right.
You get your position just right, and you can just rip stuff.
That's what I've noticed,
it's so much fun.
As soon as you have to pedal, it sucks.
Yeah.
And that's, oh, my God, it's horrible.
Well, and it's like, you know, our kind of single track, the flatter, you know, like carvy stuff that, you know, you have to pedal through, it just doesn't work really well.
Ugh.
And, you know, I'm not disparaging that design. It's like, that's the design I want anytime I get into the mountains.
Yeah, but I want to go up a gravel road then instead.
Yeah, you want to end up having the easiest way up. You know, you don't want to end up doing some really hard climb.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the center of gravity stuff, it's like, I hate to bring in road bikes or gravel bikes or whatever, but you know, this is, you know, like if you want to have a really fast bike for crits, you know, like where you're going around a lot of corners and you got to pedal as far into the corner as you can and, you know, get on the pedals as quick as you can out of the corner. I mean, you typically have a higher bottom bracket.
Okay.
And the bike's going to feel a little bit sketchy. So, you know, if you're just kind of going around a crit, you know, you're going to max out at, you know, whatever. It's like you can go through the corner at like 25 miles an hour, and then you might get up to 30, 35 miles an hour in between, and then you're going 25 through the corner again.
Yeah,
you don't really have this bigger range. You know, it's like that's kind of what you're dealing with. Whereas, let's say you're going to go for a ride in the mountains, and, you know, you're going to end up, you know, climbing for a couple hours, and then you're just going to rip a downhill.
Right.
And, you know, on the straights, you're going 50 miles an hour.
Sure.
Through the corners, you're just going to be gliding through this corner because you got a switchback, and the fastest you can go is, you know, 20 miles an hour.
Sure, sure.
You know, so you got this big differential, but the thing is, you're not really pedaling. So in that kind of situation, your grand tour bike, whatever you want to call it, you want to have it be a lot more chill.
Gotcha.
You know, and so all of this, you know, kind of like this progressive trail geometry thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing applies to the mountain bike world.
Okay.
You know, around here, if you got a pedal to go fast, then you want to have a higher bottom bracket so you can keep pedaling deeper into the corners and get on the pedals quicker out, going out of it. You know, you want to end up typically having a fairly short chain stays, but you just want a fast bike in general because you want to also bring the front tire in a little more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just, you got this really flickable bike. You don't have to lean it over a whole bunch to get around a corner because, you know, around here, you know, your shoulder would whack a tree.
Yeah.
You know.
Stop and cut that son of a gun down.
Jeez. Yeah. So, you know, it really depends. So bottom bracket height, as far as, you know, how it affects the bike, it plays in with all this other kind of stuff we're talking about. Lower it is, the more stable. In a lot of, you can blast through stuff, no problem.
Yeah.
The higher it is, you can pedal through more stuff, but the bike feels more squirrely.
Campers, how to adjust the geometry of your bike. Explained. Now, here's an idea I had, though.
Okay. Shoot.
Were you going to go on to tire size and more tire stuff?
Well, yeah. I was going to talk about how we can change the bottom bracket.
And I'm trying to figure out, can you design a bike where the bottom bracket is low, but you pedal up high?
I don't know of any way to do that, but
if
you want to be able to adjust your bottom bracket height, you get a bike with a eccentric bottom bracket.
Okay.
Because what can it does...
anybody can't take that.
No, but there's a lot of single speeds that can. Like, if you look at Niners.
Yeah.
They're a big believer in the EBB, the eccentric bottom bracket.
Right.
So what that allows you to do, and same with Jones.
Okay.
That allows you to adjust your bottom bracket height. It's got this kind of oversized shell.
Yep.
And the cranks are off-centered. They're not in the center of the bottom bracket shell.
Yeah.
So as you rotate this insert that your bottom bracket is in, it can, raise or lower your bottom bracket.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, you know, that's a way that you can end up adjusting your weight distribution. You know, how high is your center of gravity? Not a lot of bikes have that, especially not anymore.
Yeah.
Because with press fit bottom brackets and all this other kind of crazy shit, Most companies have found that it's way cheaper to build a bike without dealing with that. And there's creaking and there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people have avoided that, but you can still adjust bottom bracket height.
Okay.
And the easiest way to do that is tire size.
Mm.
And it can
explain.
So if you go from, you know, a 26 by four,
I already know this. Yes. Sorry. I got excited there.
If you go from a 26 by 4-inch tire to a 26 by 5-inch tire, you know, like a 4.8, a Bud and Lou,
you just raised it.
Yeah. Yeah. A ton. Because if you look at the diameter of a 26 by 4-inch tire, you know, it's pretty darn. Yeah. It's pretty similar to a 29er.
Yeah.
It's not a whole lot different. But then if you go to a 26 by 5-inch tire.
Yeah.
It gets to be like 30 and a half inches in diameter. So, you know, there's a 1.5-inch diameter difference. So, therefore, you're raising the bottom bracket by 3/4 of an inch.
Gotcha.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
You're going to really feel it.
Yeah. And for a fat bike in snow, you don't want to raise it.
Typically, no. You want a pretty stable bike. Unless you're like, you know, riding in really, really, really deep powder and you're digging your feet in the snow.
Well,
then having a higher bottom bracket can be good.
Sure. I gotcha. What about, and that's the reason that some, okay, so you have a fat bike, all right? I have fat bike, fill in the blank, X. And I want to change it to a 27.5 or a 29 plus. That changes the height of your bottom bracket then.
Exactly. Yeah, so not only do you have the fat bike world where you've got the 4 to 5 inch range. You know, it's like there's a ton of variations.
Yeah.
You know, you've got an entire spectrum from, you know, 3.8 or even 3.6
0.2 increments from 1.9.
Pretty much.
Right.
So you've got all that, and then you underpin the plus thing.
Sure.
So if you look at the 27.5 plus tires, they end up being about the same diameter as a 26 by 4-inch tire.
Okay.
And then you end up having similar diameters between 29 plus, so a 29 by 2.8 or 3-inch tire.
Yeah.
And then
love it.
Like a 26 by 4.8-inch tire.
Okay.
The only thing bigger than all that is, you know, a 2XL.
Right.
And then, hey, that's huge. I don't remember what that works out to be.
Yeah.
But
sounds huge.
Yeah.
It looks huge. It huge. Is huge. Yes. Yeah. Exactly. It's going to be huge.
Yep. So, sorry. I did, went to a bad place.
Jeez.
So, you know, there's a huge variation in what you can end up doing as far as the diameter of wheels.
Gotcha. And that changes the geometry of your bike because it adjusts your bottom bracket, which is the middle part of the geometry.
Yep.
Okay.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say, there's one other, like, quickie thing you can do to kind of change your effective bottom bracket height.
Jeez, there's more.
Yep.
And that was the last song they played in the first set was more. Anyways, go ahead.
You can change your crank arm length. You can basically get a whole different set crank set.
What's my crank arm length?
It all depends on what kind of bike you got.
So most of the bikes, with every bike?
Most of the bikes are 175 millimeters.
Really?
And that's how long it is from sort of the center of the cranks where it spins to your pedal.
To the pedal spindle.
Correct.
I thought the standard would be 172.5.
No. Most of the component manufacturers have kind of cheaped out, and they're
you say
silly boy. Oh,
how dare you think you know what you're talking about? You know, but really, you're like, no, I didn't mean it that way. No.
I was thinking,
So it is 175.
Yeah, probably 175 is the most standard for fat bikes.
Wow.
Manufacturers will save money by going with fewer sizes. So they typically will have 170 and 175.
Okay.
For most, you know, like fat bike, mountain bike kind of applications.
Right.
So you can end up switching between the two. Now, if you're taller, typically you want to have longer crank arms. Like, I seek out crazy ass cranks that are like 180s. I even have a pair of like 185s.
Do you really?
Yeah. Yeah, all my bikes have 180s.
So because your legs are longer, you can do a longer lever.
That's exactly it. Yep, it's more proportional.
Yeah, okay.
And there's been a bunch of studies on this and all sorts of stuff. And there's people like Leonard Zinn who like custom makes cranks and, you know, does all this stuff for tall people and stuff like that.
Okay.
It should be much more proportional, in my opinion, than it is.
Okay.
But it isn't, so we deal with it. And I've been able to seek out and find 180 cranks, so that's what I run.
How does the crank arm length change the geometry of the bike?
It doesn't. It changes your center of gravity, which is essentially what the same thing the bottom bracket height does. So, in other words, if your bike has 170 cranks and you want a more stable bike, you could go with 175 cranks. And what it's going to do is it's going to lower you. You're going to have to drop your saddle by half a centimeter.
Ah, okay.
And it's going to have some other effects. You know, you basically have a longer lever arm that you're going to push on the cranks. So you're going to get more power for every pedal stroke. For any given amount of pressure you put on that, you're going to end up getting, you know, more force to the rear wheel.
Right.
The thing is, though, you're going to have to end up moving your leg around in a bigger circle.
Sure.
So when you're, you know, like if your legs have to move more, that means you're going to consume more oxygen.
Okay.
So it might be easier for you to push on the pedals, you know, for any given amount of power at the rear wheel.
Right.
But it's going to consume more oxygen to move your leg around more. So,
oh my gosh.
So in general, when you end up having longer crank arms, you pedal at a slower cadence, you know, how many RPMs you spend per minute.
Yeah.
You're going to have a lower cadence.
Are you getting farther?
No. Okay. No, you're still, I mean, it's still like one rotation like moves the rear wheel the same amount.
Sure.
But you're it's one of those things where you're going to consume more oxygen. It's going to be easier on the pedals with a longer crank arm.
Okay.
Or it's going to be vice versa. And it's basically longer crank arms are harder to spin. So
sure.
It takes more effort to spin them quickly. And shorter crank arms, you can spin super, super fast. And doesn't consume a lot of oxygen and stuff like that. But you don't have as much leverage.
Right. Oh. So there's not a, it's not win-win.
No. No, it's like all this stuff. You know, for any change you make, there's, you know, X, Y, and Z that changes in
sure.
the other direction.
Yeah.
You know, wow. like it might help you, might not. And that's the thing. When we're talking about changing geometry on your bike, you know, there's pros and cons to everything. And you might be like, I really like this characteristic, but I don't like this characteristic.
Gotcha.
And if what we're talking about is like, okay, if you change your, you know, crank arm length, you gain in this characteristic and you lose in this characteristic, and that happens to align to what you want to do to your bike, it can be a good thing.
Hmm. It can be like hanging out with your bros instead of your hoes.
That's exactly what was going through my head. You read my mind. I don't know how you do that.
There's give and takes for the whole nine yards. So, how to adjust a geometry in an hour?
Yep.
Is it an hour? How long have we been talking?
Yeah, it's pretty darn close. I think we had a 25-minute segment, and now we got like a 37-minute segment.
Oh,
we're
cool.
Doing darn good at
good.
Keeping
and
it
we
one
got,
around 1 hour.
We got Colorado Trail and Leadville and professional development and
some
music
sort of crazy
festivals.
Music that I'm going to find.
Yeah, exactly. And some kind of crazy music. I really wish that we could just like email the band that we want to and be like, hey, can we use your music?
We could. It just takes time and effort.
I kind of think you enjoy the journey of what kind of crazy ass music are you going to find.
Heck yeah.
It better be something about geometry this time.
Ooh, man. You're setting the bar high.
Well, you know.
We'll see.
But
I have to do a lot of word association with what we talked about and what I'm trying to find.
Well, and you got to you're in a time crunch too, because you got
to
leave here in 4 days.
I have
days.
To get off
Three
the
days.
Grid.
Right, exactly.
Disappear from society and go to the high country.
And I get to answer all the questions that are sent to us through Fat Camp Podcasters,
plural,
at gmail.com or communicate with me on the Instagram. I'm mainly the guy who puts up that BS on there. I think we're done with our show, though.
Yeah, I think we're done.
I think we talked about how to adjust your geometry. And thanks to Sven. I think that's his name. It might be Sveen. I don't know. And Finsen?
No, it was a good question, though.
It was a great question, yeah. 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 And we'll be back in about a month to talk about something else. I feel like Mr. Rogers. We'll be back in about a month to talk about something else. And who knows what it'll be. But it'll be something having to do with technical aspects of fat and plus biking.
Man, I'm glad I really like beat that into your head over the last 24 episodes.
I was listening to the podcast coming through South Dakota, and I was like, wow, this show is so interesting. But only because I was in South Dakota. There's really nothing going on there for a while.
It's all relative.
Yeah, exactly. But from there on, you know what? I'm going to let you sign off. So I'm going to say thanks for listening.
Yeah, and I can't really say a whole lot else, because I'm sure I'm going to be inspired to end up saying something after some really good music.
Thank you for listening. The music we are using on today's show is from the Free Music Archive and is the song Climbing the Mountain, performed by Poddington Bear. You can find all our shows at fatbike.com, including notes for today's show.